Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Today, no guest, no in-depth investigative report. Rather, everything about health, healing, and improving the quality of our lives. You're going to be invited to share your thoughts, questions on any of the topics I deal with, articles, books, documentaries, questions that you have about life, or something you'd like to share with us. The number to call in on is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'll be starting to take your calls in about 10 minutes. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. For those of you who are pregnant, concerned about birth defects or autism, new information from the University of Davis, the Mind Institute, as published in Science Daily and the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, says that folic acid, now that's a B complex, intake during early pregnancy is associated with a reduced risk of autism in your offspring. The study furthers the researchers' earlier investigations, which found that women who take prenatal vitamins around the time of conception have a reduced risk of having a child with autism. So that's very important. That's inexpensive, easy to do, and just think about the consequences if you're able to help the child prevent autism. Next up, we have a lot, by the way, that I look at each morning when I look at the world information on science. And this is something that didn't get any attention at all. This was published in the most prestigious medical journal, scientific journal in the world, Nature. Here's what it says. The Western diet, that's the American diet, changes the gut bacteria and triggers colitis in those at risk. I'll quote this verbatim from Science Daily. It says the following. Certain saturated fats that are common in the modern Western diet can initiate a chain of events leading to complex immune disorders such as inflammatory bowel disease in people with a genetic predisposition. The findings help explain why once rare immune-mediated diseases have become more common in Westernized societies in the last half century. It also provides insights into why many individuals who are genetically prone to these diseases are never affected and how certain environmental factors can produce inflammation in those already at risk. This was done at the University of Chicago. Now, here are my thoughts on it. First, I believe they're absolutely wrong on two points. One, I believe that they've missed the idea that we have hundreds of trillions of bacteria in our body. That from birth, if we've been breastfed, and if we are given the right kind of attention, the bacteria are positive bacteria, and therefore gradually and slowly build natural immunity. And therefore, when we're younger and we come into contact with the normal microorganisms of life, we're able to mark them, create antibodies, maybe be sick for a short period of time, and then we're protected for life. Now, as we age, this has nothing, and I repeat, nothing to do with genetics. You could take an Olympian. You could take the fastest, strongest people in the world. You could take 1,000 of them, all gold medal winners. You put them on the following: colas, coffee, hamburgers, the normal amount people eat, French fries, different types of processed carbohydrates like bagels and toast. You also give them other types of meat, like bologna. And at the end of a year, just 1 year, every single one of them would have had adverse health effects. So even in spite of the fact of being outstandingly healthy, the American diet is a great equalizer, in a negative sense, of bringing your health down. Now, if you have good diet, lots of raw foods, some fermented foods, including sauerkraut, and you are conscious to take maybe once every 3 or 4 days a teaspoon of good probiotics, or even daily, then there's a high probability that you're not going to have any colitis, no itises, no ileitis, colitis, nothing wrong in your intestine. Now, take a lot of healthy fiber, including and specifically the fiber of chia seeds, apples and apple skin, grapes and blueberries, and the fibers that are in the skins really cleanse that intestine. And therefore, debris and bacteria and putrefaction from sugars causing candida, alcohol, which causes severe inflammation. Drinking one glass of alcohol is like putting a torch in your intestine. It's going to burn the cells. So when you don't have any pro-inflammatory agents and you have high fiber that sweeps the debris out of your intestine, then you recolonize your intestine by taking some probiotics. Then you heal the intestine by taking 3 ounces of whole leaf aloe vera juice twice a day for a month. Then you take vitamin C with quercetin, about 500 milligrams, 5 times or 10 times a day. You're going to heal everything in the gut in most cases. You're going to prevent colorectal cancer. You're going to prevent all those digestive conditions. It's just amazing to me that you have so many people who are considered so bright, writing for our most important publication, Nature, reported by mainstream science, and are clueless about what the meaning of health is and how to obtain it. Clueless. They have one tiny piece of the puzzle, and they're terrified, absolutely terrified, at the ideological level, that anyone should put 2 or 3 pieces together. What about those who have put hundreds of pieces together, where they're simply excluded completely for any of their input, because the money, the fame, the awards, the perpetual, forever grants is in seeking the elusive cures. And you can't do that if you use common sense and reason. But you can certainly do that and stay well-funded, well-respected, and well-published if you look for tiny little pieces that never are put together. Next up, an annual survey finds that over half of 100-year-olds are exercising virtually every day. And this comes from a major study, and what it shows that they took all these centurions, and almost 50% of them were really active, physically active, where they exercised to strengthen their muscles on a daily basis. And they had all kinds of creative workouts. They did Tai Chi and yoga. They did mind, body, spirit activity. They biked. They jogged. They even played baseball, basketball, soccer, or tennis. And those were the ones that were living the longest life and were the healthiest. And we're going to have an awful lot of people who are passing 100. We have, are you ready for this? 90 million Americans, over 1/4 the entire population. Actually, it's a little more than 1/3 of the population who are over 47. And there was a time, let us not forget, where 40 was considered, you were old. 45, yep. By 50, forget it. But now we have nutrients like creatine monohydrate, D-ribose, the branched amino acids, L-carnosine, and resveratrol that actually slow down the aging and reverse it. Plus add in exercise, and there's no need to fear getting old as you did historically. And finally, psychological distress increases the risk of death from stroke. Now, this is from the Canadian Medical Association Journal, much like our American Medical Association Journal. And here's what it says, quote, psychological distress was associated with a higher risk of death from stroke. Anxiety, depression, sleeping problems, and a loss of confidence, all common in approximately 20% of the general population. And there is ample evidence linking psychological distress to coronary artery disease. And there is death almost inevitable when you're under chronic psychological stress. So this is where the University College London in the United Kingdom sought to understand this link. And they looked at 68,000 men and women who participated in this health survey for England. they were averaging 54 years of age. And they found out when you're stressed, you're going to be more likely to die of a stroke. So what about the ways that we can live a longer life? Well, easy. How about just not personalizing everything? How about not trying to control everything and everyone? How about lightening up? There's this concept, and it's a simple concept to understand. Let's just say for a second that that you have a gallon jug. And in that gallon jug, you fill it completely to the top with golf balls. And then you take a look and you ask yourself, is this jug full? Because what's in this jug are the most important things in my life. I've got my hobbies, that's one golf ball. Got my friends, really like my friends, spend time with them. That's important. Love exercising. So that's one of those golf balls filling my jug, which is my life, just a metaphor. Love to eat exciting and original and different foods. Going to different markets. Let's say you go to a Spanish market, and an Italian market, and a Chinese market, Japanese market, French market. You buy interesting herbs and roots, vegetables and seasonings. And then you experiment by going online and getting some different recipes. So food is a big, big part of that. It's just one of the golf balls. And then spending quality time with your pet, your companion pet, that unconditionally loving creature that just wakes up every day, always happy to see you. Well, okay, good. All right, that's a golf ball. Looking for environments to spend some time in that you can really enjoy. Oh, all right. In New York, it's going to, well, let's see, the Frick Museum. That's a neat place to hang out, especially if you're in that little fountain area. But then you also have the Metropolitan Museum of Art, especially this time of year, where you can go up on the roof and look out over all the greenery and the beauty of Central Park. But then you've got the Bronx Botanical Garden, the Brooklyn Botanical Garden, Riverside Park, sitting there watching the boats go by. You have countless places to go that give you joy. So enjoying the environment that you're in, that's part of that. That's golf ball. And then seeking ways to manifest a spiritual connection to people. Doing good things for people because you're a good person. And good people do good things. That's one of those golf balls. All right, challenging yourself culturally, getting out, seeing some avant-garde theater, trying some improvisational workshops, going to folk dancing from around the world classes that are out in Central Park, going to the farmer's market, engaging in cultures, cultural wellness, stimulating yourself culturally. That's very important, especially when you live in the cultural center of the world, New York. Wonderful, beautiful artists in New York. This is something I know intimately because being from the Upper West Side and having a little destination health food store for 28 years, it's been at 89th and Broadway, and you have no idea how many times people come in and say, "Boy, I'm glad this is here. I don't know what I'd do without it. I don't want to go to the big stores. They're not warm and intimate and loving, and they don't have the right music on and all this great food." And it's just the feedback you get. And a lot of those are very famous people. And I mean thousands of them. Thousands are in the creative arts. You wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know some of the top Broadway stars and film stars, television stars, writers, professors at Columbia, all these great people, the great intelligentsia from the Upper West Side, they're in there all the time and exchanging that energy. Because quality food and insight and information is one of those little balls in our jar that we care about. And being in that mix of people, being able to be around people who are so creative and so stimulating. Even people from the Lower East Side, from the boroughs, come in. Yes, meeting people who take the effort and take the time and the inconvenience to get to a place because they know the environment, the energy that is shared is so positive. So you put that in there. Why? Why is that important? Because you have no idea until you've owned a small business. When you take no money out, where year in and year out, every penny goes back in, feeding the homeless, helping those in the audience who are financially challenged so at least they can buy foods and get help, hiring people that cost a lot of money. I don't pay chump change. I pay really good money for the people who then care for people for free. And then one day you think, man, you know, I take nothing out, I put a lot in. Is it worth it? The average person will sell it. And then you get that feedback and you say, no. No, there's a quality of energy exchange, a symbiosis. That's one of those balls in there. You can't use an economic value for everything that has value. You have to value things other than on an economic level. And then one day you think, wow, this is all that's important. If we just stopped there and gave that our time and energy and focus, and saw how wonderful life could be if we didn't take it beyond a certain point. More often than not, we do. Because then someone says, you think your life's full? Yeah. I don't think so. Why not? Well, here, they come over and they take a lot of trivia and they take everyone else's stories. More often than not, the stories of crisis and tragedy and being used and manipulated and abused and trauma, and it's a court of sand and distractions and things that are of non-essentialness to our life. But they put that in the jar, and sure enough, it fits. And you think, wow. And then someone else says, you think your life's full? You say, yeah, my life's full. No, here. I'm going to put in there excessive obligations and responsibilities. I'm going to put in there so many to-do lists, and I'm going to have a speed dial for everything you do. You're going to be so anally maladjusted because you're never going to be able to do everything you're supposed to in a period of time you're supposed to do it, and never to high quality enough so you feel comfortable and confident. So this is 2 quarts of water going in your gallon jug. And I'll bet it fits. And sure enough, with all these extra responsibilities and all these things to do and all these to-do lists, they all go into that jar. And by golly, it all fits. How about that? Try it, if you doubt me. This is not a metaphor now. This is an actual physical reality. You can fill your gallon jug with golf balls to the top. But then you can put a quart of sand in, and it fills all the space. Then you can put water in, and it fills the remaining space. Now, here's a question for you. Where's your golf balls? Well, they're in there. Yeah. Define them. I can't. My life's just so overwhelming. I got the stresses. That was a part of that in there. And I'm confused. And I'm confused about everything. I don't understand any of this body politic. It doesn't make sense. You know, both the left and the right seem to be radicalized to common sense and reasons. That's in there. Everything's a slurry. Everything has become eutrophied. Everything is a stagnant growth. I just don't understand this. So I'm not even going to try to define my life anymore. And I say, hold on a second, friend. You weren't confused when you were doing the things that were important, essential, and happy. It's when everything else came in that shouldn't have been there. So just turn it all over. Let it all come out, and then wash the balls off and put them back. Start over. Renew, rejuvenate, redefine what is important. How simple is that? But that's the reality of it. I'm Gary Knoll, going to take your calls now for the remainder of the program. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And we'll take your calls just after this break. And then I'm told that Luann Panessi, speaking from New York, will be on the phone with your emails that she gets. And she'll be reading them in just a moment. Please stay with us.
She musters a smile for his nostalgic tale. Never coming near what he wanted to say or here to realize it never really was. She had a place in his life. He never made her think twice as she rises to her apology.
The dials. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take your calls in a moment here. They're being answered in New York City in our studio. I'll be back in the studio later this week. But for right now, Luann is taking your issues. And let's say hello to Luann Panassi. She is a holistic nurse, having been a nurse administrator, an overseer of over 100 people within a medical system, until she saw a light that she didn't see before, that she, with all of her efforts and all of her concern, she really wasn't helping people, nor were the people in that system. They thought they were. But today she is, because she's a holistic nurse, sees things differently. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary, and thank you for that. Yes, and I have an email here from a physician. And every now and then, we do get one of those. And this gentleman, his name is Thomas. He's been listening for about a year and a half. And he says, I'm hooked. He said his brother listened to you on ABC for years. And one of his questions is, why aren't you on any major networks anymore? But secondly, he says, after a year and a half has gone by, and seeing 12 of your documentaries and reading books, specifically Be a Healthy Woman, Get Healthy Now, The Food Mood Connection, which are phenomenal reference books for him in his practice, he realizes now that it's very, very clear that the medical models that all of the physicians have been indoctrinated to use are limited, they're closed, and in his opinion, dangerous. Yet, he says, the whole profession refuses to look at the information that you and others are providing. So his question is, he wonders why. And he says, what can we do to move medicine into more of a health-oriented position?
Let me answer that philosophically. Are you familiar with George Santayana?
No.
Okay. Very popular back in the 1960s and 70s, a philosopher, common philosopher. And he said, every real object must cease to be what it seemed, and none could ever be what the whole soul desired. Imagine then all the people who went into medicine or healthcare, nutritionists, dietitians, chiropractors, psychologists, psychiatrists, and medical doctors of varying specialties, with the idea that their real object was to heal. But their curriculum and their medical schooling and their indoctrination and their continuing impression through advertising was that they were rewarded for their efforts, but no one asked about did the patient survive. So as a result, people can make the best of effort with the best of intent, with no cynicism implied or offered, and yet at the end of the day, more people will die because of mistakes in medicine this year than all heart attacks or strokes or cancer as an individual cause of disease. It's the number one killer, your doctor. and the number one cause of injury. In fact, more Americans will be injured this year from medicine that doesn't work than all of American casualties in the First and Second World War, Korean and Vietnam War combined. Let's just even throw in, how about the Civil War? Could you imagine that? And that's just each year. So what you have is you have a phenomenal illusion. And that's what George Santayana was saying. Every real object must cease to be what it seemed, and none could ever be what the whole soul desired. So even if you desired to heal, if you desired to help, you can't until you understand the real object of the exercise. The object of the exercise stopped over 100 years ago about helping the patient. It has been manipulated behind the scenes by the pharmaceutical companies, the giant cartels. The giant cartels, the pharmaceutical companies, created the Flexner Report, the Rockefellers did. And then they said any competition to our control is considered quackery. So homeopathy, quackery. Chiropractic, quackery. Naturopathy, quackery. Hypnotherapy, quackery. Mind-body spiritual medicine, quackery. So once they got rid of all competition, where they had a virtual monopoly, then they set about sanctifying this by putting rules in place in all 50 states that saying that if you treat a patient, you can only treat the patient using current medically accepted practices. Hence, if you were treating a person with cancer, you could use chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery in any combination, not a problem. If you were treating someone with an inflammatory condition of the knees or joints and you wanted to turn off the COX-2 enzymes causing that problem, you could use Vioxx, Celebrex, any of the anti-inflammatories, aspirin, ibuprofen. If you had a person who was diagnosed with depression or any form of mental condition, you could give any one of dozens of antipsychotic or antidepressant medications, Zoloft, Paxil. No one would question you. So therefore, your efforts were codified into very strict, this is what you can do and this is what you cannot do. If you kill every single patient that comes into your office, as long as you're doing it with official medicine, you'll be rewarded. If you should cure every single patient that comes in, but you do it using alternative medicines that are not sanctified, you will be punished. And for decades, the state medical boards created such an excessive force against any adventurous clinician that I actually had to go to bat with Dr. Robert Vance, and just one example, James Privateer, and others, Dr. Janice Keller Phelps, dozens and dozens, Dr. Warren Levine, dozens and dozens of physicians who never hurt a single patient. To the contrary, patients showed up to testify that they were helped, but that wasn't what they were charged with. They were charged with fraud. Now, what was the fraud? They weren't using current medical standards. But they would argue the current medical standards of giving chemotherapy and these are actually harming the patient, not helping. But that's not the role. The juries frequently had to vote a person guilty even though their conscience said the person was a hero. And that's how warped and perverse our medical system was, our judicial system. And as a result, it had a numbing effect, a chilling effect. If you go after the best, the most noble and the most talented in a field who are actually helping people, and you take away their license, you ridicule them, you mock them, you put them in these Stalinistic medical trials, you have medical McCarthyism, what then does it do to lesser souls who do not have the strength, nor the character, nor the integrity to risk any of that? And so one day we have this idea of get along, you know, and go along. And then one day, as George Bernard Shaw would say, I'm a millionaire. That is my religion. So a person was a capitalist. That is their religion. And medicine became nothing but money-making for all involved, for the for-profit hospitals, for the insurance for profit, for the drug makers, the prosthetic makers, and all the people involved. And one day we wake up and you could spend a night in the Waldorf Astoria in a suite for less than a simple room, a hospital bed with no medical treatment, no diagnosis, just laying in a hospital bed in a ward, cost you more than a suite at the Waldorf Astoria. And you think, how is this possible? How could we get here? Why does it cost $75,000 for this operation? Why, as an anesthesiologist, are you charging me $7,000? Why am I charged all these amounts of money, leading to the number one cause of bankruptcy in 7 out of 10 straight years in the United States prior to 2007 crash? Then that gets to the character of an entire field. And it was Eric Hoffer, the great philosopher, who said, "It is thus with most of us, we are what other people say we are. We know ourselves chiefly by hearsay." So people knew they were in the right side of everything because everyone said they were. They had no more proof to validate that they were doing anything right than was necessary, and hence there was nothing necessary. As long as you played by the rules, you were considered right because everyone acknowledged it. Your car, your home, your standard of living, your position, the deferred to sense of your esteem. You're considered better than others. More noble, you held secrets that were sacred and could not be violated. Much like a priest, you were the high priest of medicine. And hence, again as he said, it is thus with most of us in medicine. We are what other people say we are. If they say we're brilliant, we are brilliant. If they say we're great, then we'll charge accordingly. We know ourselves chiefly by hearsay. Why? Because the only way you'd ever know if you're an actual physician of merit is if your patients get better, not worse. If your patients are able to sustain their life and not cut it short. And hence, if that was the measure, then virtually all of American medicine, with the exception of a small percentage of emergency medicine, would fail. Fail miserably. But instead of looking at the failure of medicine, the failure of proper diagnosis, the failure of proper treatment, the failure to consider the person a whole being and not just a bunch of broken parts, the failure to see that the entire game was rigged at every level to make money for the pharmaceutical industry, and when they kill millions of people, all they do when they're caught is pay a little penalty. No one's reputation is harmed, no profits are affected, and everything goes forward. Now that is a unique game to play in. So medicine never looks at results. It doesn't have to, ever. So when you're the doctor who decides to look at the results, and you say, "Holy cow, did we just kill 66,000 people giving him one single drug, Vioxx? That's more than all the American casualties in the Vietnam War?" And the answer is yes. Then what is the simple takeaway message, Luann? What we deny, we cannot change. Again, what we deny, we cannot change. So if you deny who you are as a physician, if you deny what medicine has become, if you deny what nursing has become, and hospitals for profit and insurance for profit have become, then no one can ever change it. And there is so much money spread around to all the politicians that they're not about to challenge it. And only when necessary will they raise their voice one slight octave, but in the same range of suggesting, "We care about the people, and that's why we're going to do something, but no one asks for the details. What exactly are you going to do?" "Well, we'll have a meeting on it, and then when you have forgotten about that, then we'll put it to sleep. But it doesn't go away and it doesn't change." So that's where we're at when it comes to medicine. But I would use that as a metaphor for the average person. If a person denies that they are selfish, they will not change it. If a person denies that they are greedy, they will not change it. Because if you deny that you're selfish and you deny you're greedy, then you don't see yourself as others do. I have a question for you, Luann.
Yes.
Did you recently send me an email from someone who wanted to participate in an event, and when they didn't, they personally attacked you?
Yes, they did a whole character assassination over rants of several messages.
And you recorded those messages, so you have it all on tape because you sent it to me and I listened to it. What do you want to bet that that person sees themselves as the victim and not you?
It wouldn't surprise me. What you're saying is spot on, Gary, and very prophetic.
What do you want to bet that that person thinks that somehow the world owes them something and they're going to push as hard as they can to get it, take no prisoners, and when if they ever get caught or confronted by you as you did, they will simply deny it all because their whole life is based upon denial of what they see in the mirror. They don't want to see the ugly creature looking back. They don't want to see the lies, the manipulation, the distortion. They don't want to see someone who will respect no boundary. They don't want to see the truth of how dysfunctional they are and hateful they are. And when you make the mistake of reminding them that you're a human being and they're not acting like one, they just double down again. They feel the louder they yell, the more insistent they are, the more they intrude upon your life, the more they beat you. Somehow, someone at some point will say, I give up, you win, you're right. But they're never right. Now imagine that happening, not just to you in that one situation, but imagine that happening to everyone else in that person's life. Do you think anybody would ever go after you without going after everyone else?
True.
If a person lies to you and doesn't lie to someone else, are they a liar?
Absolutely.
If a person steals from you, wouldn't steal from someone else, are they a thief?
Absolutely.
If a person gossips about you but not someone else, are they a gossip, malicious person?
Yes, they are.
If a person refuses to acknowledge their own limitations and weakness, is that a character defect in them or not?
Well, I don't know if it's a character defect, but it certainly is, you know, something to consider.
It's a defect, and it's a deep defect. The trouble is, in our society, our politicians do that every day. They lie. But they're even more pernicious because they take away a person's power and then use it against them. The government should not be feared, but our government is feared because it is a warmongering government. It cares not about the individual, cares not about the sanctity of life. We're the only nation to have used nuclear weapons on others. Yet we pontificate that we're the only one to be trusted with it. We're the ones who spy on our own citizens, and yet we want those citizens to be obedient. We're the ones who say we have a constitution, yet they're the first to strip it of all of its unique qualities, including habeas corpus and freedom of speech. Now, if you exercise your freedom of speech, you're on a watch list, you're on a terrorist list. And yet we have a left that pretends that in its intellectual conceit that it's supposed to understand these things and has abrogated every single responsibility to the same cancer. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, all the Democrats, all of them that are corporatized, homogenized, blanderdized, completely, completely pimped. And you think you're ever going to get an answer that's honest from any of them about anything? Go back to what I said. If you lie to one and not to another, are you a liar?
Absolutely.
So the real character of all these people seeking any power in our lives is that they're defective, sociopathic, defective in the extreme. And that defect is because they're so insecure. And the only security that they feel is when they've gotten it from someone else. Always through false enticement. Give me your power and I will use it constructively. And what they do, they use it destructively. All their gambles, all of the excessive debt, the corrupt, utterly corrupt, worthless bureaucracies that the left loves to fill with even more worthless people to steal even more of our money, will never be critical of it. The lies to manipulate people, where all they are into is controlling their own league or group's jobs and payroll. The right, who says that they're for freedoms, yet allow every single freedom to be taken away from us, and then focus on nonsensical, non-essential issues that have nothing to do with quality of life. So the left and the right that have been corporatized are completely sold out. Why would you ever entertain a conversation with them, and why would you ever trust anything they say when they show that they are absolutely capable of saying and doing anything to get their way? And they push hard. Now go back to that one single individual Do you see any difference between a person that does not see themselves as they truly are, nor historically ever have, and will do anything, say anything, without any remorse or without any sense that what the lessons that they could have learned haven't? Do you think anyone's going to make a difference in that person's life? Do you think they're ever going to look in a mirror and see a true reflection back? Because they don't feel the pain. They don't feel the harm. They don't sense it. They don't feel it of what they inflict upon other people. They had this wonderfully perfected pathology of hurting others and making themselves scream as if they're in pain. How unique is that emotional alchemy? And yet look how many people in our society do exactly that. So I see this as a metaphor from the individual to the corporate to the banks to the educational system to the religious institutions to our government in its entirety, which is completely corrupt at every level, at every bureaucracy. And we're not honest about any of it, are we? Because we as individuals who look in the mirror need so much to see an image of encouragement looking back at us, of hope, of, you know, happy days will be here again. No, they won't. Nothing will ever be better. If you've lost anything, you're going to stay lost. It's not coming back, ever, not in this lifetime. And yet, that's what keeps people alive, wanting to believe. And between that and the miracle resuscitation, we're given distractions. We're given television and radio and newspapers and magazines and movies. We're given everything to distract us so we don't have to keep looking in the mirror. And if we do, we have people changing the image. See this pretty face, see this happy face, look at this. And then we have people who are masters of marketing our dysfunction and our fears. Oprah, to me, is one of the most single, creative, and successful manipulators in world history. You won't find five people that transformed their lives because of any of that. It was just theater. But we love theater of compassion, but it's still theater. And we love spiritual materialism, but it's still theater. And we love, you know, the motivators on PBS as if they really cared about us. They don't give a damn for anybody. They care about their egos and how much money they make and what it means if they're successful to get another shot. And yet we believe it. We believe all the wrong things for the wrong reasons until one day we awaken and then we see in the mirror the real image looking back and we think, oh my God, where have I been? And we just have to say, friend, you've been asleep. Now you're awake. Can you handle what you see? I think so. Are you ready to live an authentic life? I hope so. It's going to take some pain and discipline because the pain is separating from what you're not, but what you mastered, your story. And everybody masters their story. Everybody's got a story that they've told everyone 1,000 times, and figure if they tell it one more time, somehow you'll believe it. Luann, how many times in your life have you seen people who say they love you and do hateful things?
Oh, more than once.
Okay. Well, if you love someone, do you do anything that's hateful?
Of course not.
All right. Well, why is it then in our society millions of people will tell someone they love them and then do bad things, harmful things, destructive things, vile things, things that are despicable, and yet turn around and say, it's all for love, and if you don't feel my love, then something's wrong with you, and then blame the other person. What kind of game is that?
I was just telling someone today that when I was younger and my parents in their rages would beat us, and I remember, I think I was 7 or 8 years old, and I said, why do you do that? And my mother said, because I love you. And I said, love me a little less.
Well, there is no love and hate together. There's
no.
Just hate disguised as love in order to manipulate people into accepting them. Do you know what you see with the people that need the most control within someone's life? A very insecure person. A person that is so insecure that they're willing to say anything and do anything in order to get someone to believe in them, and then the authentic self comes out. And if the authentic self is dysfunctional, if the authentic self is immature, if the authentic self is just a manipulative person, then that's what you end up seeing. Now you're in a catch-22. You've trusted someone, you've let them in your life, now they're taking advantage of you. And then when they can't anymore and you don't want anymore, then they make you feel bad about yourself. I counsel people all the time who say, I don't know why I allowed that to happen. in my field, my world is, you only allow someone to screw with you once. Then you say, never again, and you close the door. And if they're going to scream at you and throw things at you, write you text messages that are toxic and hate-filled, and always ending it with, if only you knew love, understand that this person is just looking in the mirror and can't possibly see their true image. That is what we're dealing with. All right?
You're okay.
Okay. Thank you, Luann. Okay. Let's take another one. Hold on, Luann, because I want to go over and say hello to a couple of our listeners here. Let's say hello to Kevin from California. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Dr. Nell. How are you, sir?
Good.
I had a question about juicing. I've heard you say before, you know, juice once a week and put some vitamin C and lemon in it. But then when I want to store it, do I put it in a regular Ziploc bag? Isn't that bad when you put it in a freezer?
I suggest that you put it into a glass jar. And then you have your glass containers, pint, quart, gallon, start with a gallon or more, and then mix some vitamin C, a teaspoon of vitamin C per gallon, and the juice of 2 lemons per gallon, and then you put what you want in the night before into the refrigerator. The best thing would be just a series of quart jars. That way most people could easily handle a quart during the day. That would be the way I'd handle it. I wouldn't be doing it in plastic bags.
Sure, so the glass doesn't crack?
No, I haven't found that it cracks.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's say hello to John from North Carolina. Hi, John. John, you're on.
John. I'm calling because I have a plantar fasciitis, a heel spur, and yeah. I was wondering what you could recommend to help me out on that. And also, just one quick suggestion. A lot of police departments are treating citizens really bad. And one thing that the people that listen to this show, I think, could do is get involved with programs that are more involved with the local police departments, like the auxiliary police and things like that. I was involved with that for a few years, and that way, when worse comes to worse, there could be people that really care involved in these programs and have to see the people's face and work with them and live with them, because a lot of police officers actually don't live in the town they work in.
I think that's a good idea, John. I would look at it just a little differently for a moment. I'd like you to think about this. The role of the police officer has to be to serve the public interest in protecting it, not in militarizing itself or allowing itself to militarize to look and view the public as the enemy. And that's what's happening now. That's one of the biggest problems we have, the pathologizing of a system, meaning the American public, because of their concerns, legitimate concerns, and their desire to speak out, to write about it, text about it, march, demonstrate peacefully, that now long is no longer considered a legitimate right of people. So how do you deal with that? Well, you pass the Patriot Act and the Second Patriot Act, and you pass the National Defense Authorization Act, and then you pass another bill that allows the president to indefinitely detain or assassinate any American without any judicial process whatsoever, no oversight. That's rampant fascism. That means that the police state has become a criminal state. Because in every fascist regime, in every dictatorship, it is the military that then surrounds the power bases, protects those who are wealthiest and the most considered the most important within a given area, and always against those. They go after unions, union organizers. They go after religious leaders, as they did in El Salvador, the nuns who were shot. They go after in Honduras and in the United States now. Now, if you protest, you're going to be on a list. If you're an animal activist and you show the dangers to animals and the abuse of animals and the cruelty of animals, you're arrested under a terrorist act, which means that you can spend the rest of your life in jail for simply taking a picture of an animal being abused. The person doing the abusing, nothing. You Now you're the enemy. So when the American public has allowed its police that served a noble and honorable service for so many decades to be morphed into this highly aggressive, unnecessarily brutal, and now spying, going up and down streets, and with this new machine they have that looks into people's homes so you can see the person's actual figure. And hear their conversations, and looking at every one of the person's emails. All of these are a gross violation of the basic ethic and ethos of living together peacefully in a society. Then we begin to fear anybody. You know, a person, a TSA agent, can do anything to you and get away with it. In fact, anyone who's in the police can do almost anything. It is rare for someone to be held accountable because we have a fear of authority. And therefore, the American public now is being set into a position of being feared by those in power. We don't have all of these 30,000 drones over the United States because of Al-Qaeda in the United States. We have these because we're afraid of the public standing up and withdrawing their support from corporate America and from political America. That terrifies those. So if they're able, when they choose to counterattack against the activists and the provocateurs, then they feel their position gained through corruption, through manipulation, is safe. And the police now are the front lines of that. So we need to do more than see, you know, that our local police understand who we are. We need the police in America, and there are many, to understand what their constitutional obligations are. And right now, they're at risk. Just remember, when it comes to all these demonstrations, the local police, they're the ones who are confronting the nonviolent and constitutionally protected demonstrators as if somehow they are criminals, and they're not. I appreciate your call. And one of the things I would look at is understand that the B-complex is one of the most important single thing for any type of plantar fasciitis. And I would also look at vitamin C in very high doses and ways of naturally chelating down any form of spur and using magnetic pulses to break down spurs so the body can reabsorb them. Magnets are also very good at doing that. All the best to you. And let's say hello. That was John from North Carolina. And let's also say hello to John from California, a different John from California.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I wanted to ask you a question. On Sunday nights, I used to listen to Dr. John McDougall about 20 years ago. I think you mentioned him one time on one of your shows. Dr.
Yes.
John McDougall?
Yeah.
And it was about 20 years ago, and I haven't heard him since. And I was just curious, whatever happened to him, he used to say that the cattle industry might be trying to, get him off the radio.
In some areas, I'm sure that they had enough power to do so. But John McDougall is a practicing physician. He's doing very well. He is a vegan. He emphasizes the power of veganism. I just filmed Dr. McDougall. I have a new film coming out, a new documentary coming out in the next 2 months, and he is prominent in it, along with every other vegan holistic physician in America.
He was so uplifting because he used to talk about people coming into his clinic. This was 20 years ago, I think, and he was saying they'd come in with angina, and they could hardly even walk from the car to the admission office. And after 6 months of going on the John McDougall diet, they were up walking all around the hospital, and the angina, it hadn't totally gone away, but they were ambulatory and able to get around again.
It was really inspiring. He was speaking the truth then, and he is just as vital and looks just the same today, as you will see.
He was begging.
John, we don't have any time left. I've got to go, but I thank you for asking about Dr. McDougall, and you'll see him shortly in our new feature film. Luann, we're out of time, but I thank you for asking the one you did, because I tried to tie several concepts into one, and that being, if a doctor sees the truth in the field of medicine, they cannot help but, if they're living a conscious life, change. They're not going to change medicine, but they can change.
Well, you're absolutely right.
All right.
And I was in that.
You did it. You changed.
Well, I did, and I believe that if I naively believe that if I kept climbing up the ladder of administration, that I would finally have the capability and the authority to make the changes that I saw that were necessary. And all I saw was the higher up I climbed, the more responsibilities they gave me, and the more I was beholden to their pocketbook.
Well, not anymore. And also, you don't allow people to disrespect you today. That's a separate lesson, because if a doctor doesn't allow the medical establishment he or she is in to disrespect them, and they put their respect in the patient, then why should we have a separate set of rules that we allow individuals to disrespect us and come with their own manipulation and pushing us? We shouldn't allow a government to do it. We shouldn't allow anyone to do it. And that's why I support those people and groups out there that are standing up for their constitutional rights, their human rights, their personal rights, and the dignity of self. And there's nothing more challenging than people who would challenge you and say that you lack dignity or you lack intellect or you lack something because you decided not to give them their way, and all they have in response is a childish, immature, sociopathological behavior that shows where they've been at and are at. And good for you for standing up and saying you don't get a second chance to be abusive. No one should give anyone a second chance to be abusive in life. And if we do, then the problem is the person abusing us, the problem is us. We shouldn't be a doormat for anyone. Unfortunately, we've become a doormat for politicians, for celebrities, for corporations, for credit card companies, for banks. Just look at how many people use us as if we're nothing more than a doormat. Well, you don't have to be that way. You can stand up and turn around and say, no more. You're not wiping my feet on your feet on me ever again. So that's where I believe that we have a whole new spirit in this country, a whole new sense of revitalizing, the sense of, I'm okay, you're not going to tell me how I should live, who I am, you have no right to try to make me feel bad about myself. And in our society, if you're not rich, you're not successful, you're not a celebrity, then you have no power. Hence, power is a completely artificial, existential abstract. It is given to people who adhere to a certain standard, and then the other people in America are supposed to support that, as if somehow this is this sacred golden cow they're supposed to worship to. How stupid are we when we make people who are doing great work out there, they're Nobel Prize winners, who are around the world actually making a difference. We don't know their names, but we'll know all about Snooki. We'll know all about Kim Kardashian. We know about everything that is irrelevant and stupid and vile and vulgar and lacking in any value. We'll know all about them, but we won't know about real people doing real work to help in real causes. Isn't that amazing?
You're right.
So let's just grow up, smarten up, and just stop making stupid choices. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
I'm Gary Noll. I want to thank all of you for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's show.